The Rain 2021 Audio Evolution Summit.
Hello and welcome to the session. It's great to have you here. My name is Francis Curry, and what I do is I help radio stations and audio brands grow audiences. As Kurt said, I'm an international audio consultant, a media research partner, and an executive coach, and you can find me at franciscurry.com. I think it's fair to say audio is just hot at the moment. I mean, there's just so much going on. Mergers and acquisitions, consolidation, new products, new services, new platforms, new revenue models in radio, in streaming, in podcasting, in social audio. So much so that I think we've almost got a bit punch drunk with announcements, press releases, and companies vying for attention, trying to get noticed. But for me, there's one company that has just recently signaled a big shift to the outside world after a couple of years of deep strategic thinking and development. Now, I'm talking, of course, about Audacy, the company formerly known as Entercom until just 2 months ago. For my money, I think they demonstrate a clarity of thinking and a scale of ambition that sets them aside from many other companies sort of scrabbling in a similar space. Particularly for people outside the US, you should know Audacy is the second largest radio broadcaster in the US with 235 terrestrial radio stations. That includes, by the way, the CBS stations bought 3 years ago. So Broadway Bill Lee is on their books. Does it get better than that? They're a top three podcast company. They're the owners of the fastest growing digital audio app in the US. And this company connects to over 170 million listeners a month. So there is so much to talk about. You know, is the name change a rebadging exercise or is it something more? And what about that name? What's driven the changes? Where's the new North Star? Does traditional radio fit into the new vision? And what about radio.com? Deep questions we'll come back to several times during the course of today. You know, can anybody make some real money out of podcasting? And also, in the light of recent statistics, is social audio a fad or does it have a future? So at any point, if you have any questions during this session, please just write them in the chat box and I'll keep an eye out for them. But now I'm delighted to welcome two of the chief architects of Audacy to Rain's Global Audio Evolution Summit. First of all, JD Crowley, Chief Digital Officer since 2017. And JD leads the strategy for the entire digital portfolio, so including streaming, news, sports, music, websites, apps, social media platforms. Can you imagine his business card? He also looks after Eventful, SmartReach Digital, and Cadence 13, which is a producer of premium podcasts. Also joining me is Ken Lagana. Ken is EVP for Digital Sales and Strategy. He leads sales strategy for the company's digital business, including the Audacy app, more on that in a few minutes, Cadence 13, Pineapple Street Studios, Podcorn Media, and more. So gentlemen, welcome both. Thank you so much for sparing the time. I should tell the delegates that when we did a briefing call on Monday, it was 8 a.m. your time on a Monday morning, and it was not your first meeting of the day. So I think we know how busy you guys are. So thanks for taking the time. And I want to start with a very simple question for both of you.
Hey, Francis, can I just say I appreciate I've been called a lot of things. I've never been called an architect before. So I just want to throw that out before you load in your first question. So thank you for that. First time for everything.
You know what? Most of us have been called many worse things than that, right?
That's true. Sorry. So, go ahead.
No, Ken, you first then. So, you know, you've had a successful and varied career. You joined this enterprise relatively recently. So I've got two questions for you first. Why audio and why now?
Having been in the media business for, 20 plus years and really the majority of that leaning into digital most strongly over the course of, my trajectory, I personally started to get into audio just as a personal thing, probably 10 years ago, predominantly driven by podcasting. And when I started to look at the landscape and how this business and the medium was evolving, and Francis, you said it, I mean, this business has gone through such a renaissance. It's absolutely unbelievable to see. I had to get involved in it because I really look at this as very, very early stages. There's so much more to go here. And then when I looked at, the players and the different portfolios in the media landscape specific to audio, JD and I have known each other for a while, and he was already here. I just put two and two together, and I just knew that collectively we can make a huge difference here. And it was kind of like getting the keys to a Ferrari that's sort of been, sitting in the garage to a degree. And I think what you guys are seeing and what the world is seeing over the past, 5-6 months, and really over the last 90 days specifically, we're taking that baby out and it's on the street now, and we're having a lot of fun. And I'm personally having a lot of fun representing all of the different brands and the businesses that we've constructed here and put together to really help our partners grow their business.
And do you see any parallels with this sort of firmament of stuff happening in audio with any other industries? Are there parallels you can draw or lean on?
Oh man, is there ever? Having spent 17 plus years at CBS on the digital side, and really being in the video space early on, I mean, the unbelievable parallels between what's gone on in video and what's going on here. There's so many parallels that you can draw, and I think there's a lot of things that we've also learned from watching that business evolve. And frankly, some of the struggles that business has had. And I think we have the ability to do things a little bit differently, and we are doing things a little bit differently. And so, when they say history repeats itself, I'm a big believer that, in many ways it does.
Well, I'm very excited to hear a bit more about that. So JD, great to have you here as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
I'd love to follow up a bit more on that in terms of parallels with industry, but can we just start with, you spent more time in audio, but on the digital side of radio, is that right? So why audio and why now?
Sure. So like Ken, I started in video. I was at Paramount and Viacom. I was at CBS, worked in global television distribution, and then created what was our first branded content studio at CBS to work with a lot of great advertising partners, and ultimately migrated into digital, creating content for streaming services and building out global IP in the video space. And like Ken, saw the audio space evolving and digitizing in a really interesting way. And so I jumped from video to audio in early 2017.
There's not many people can say that.
I thought, as Ken said, we saw what happened in print when print went, when print digitized. We, Ken and I, lived it in video and learned some things, made some mistakes, but did a lot of things right, and thought, boy, you could go and write this chapter from the beginning and take an incumbent and make the incumbent part of the transformation, which I thought was really exciting. The one difference in audio and video, though, when we think about transformation, is in audio, our core business, our linear audience on broadcast, isn't falling apart the way that other traditional linear media is. We still have 170 million listeners we reach. The cum, if you will, the number of people we reach on a weekly and monthly basis has held strong and, in fact, grown in many years. And our reach is pervasive. 92% of adults, in the U.S. use radio weekly, and that's the same in many territories across the world. And so the benefit for us is having this really great legacy linear business that has a really big reach that we can leverage and has great content creators that we can leverage. And that business is still strong. And then we get to add to it in an offensive rather than a defensive manner, streaming, podcasting, other digital solutions for our clients, sports betting, which is a really interesting opportunity for us as a company, given our footprint in sports. So for us, it's a no-brainer.
So as simply as you can, what is the new vision for the new company? What is different about Audacy? Because, I was slightly cheeky, but clearly what you're doing is much more than just rebadging a business.
It's a great point, Francis. We talk about, is this a change of sign or a sign of change? And as corny as that may sound, I think it's really important. We are a fundamentally different company today than we were back in 2017 when Entercom originally bought the CBS Radio assets. We were fundamentally different than we were in 2019 when we entered the podcast space through some significant M&A. And we're fundamentally different today than we were even back in January, because obviously the space is evolving so quickly. So for us, you know, again, our history is steeped in our core broadcast business. And we own two of the very first commercial radio stations in the United States. And as Ken and I have been doing some work on the rebrand, we went back and listened to some of those first broadcasts. And what's so amazing about them is, in the very first broadcast we did on the very first radio station in the US, the host says, "We'd like anybody out there listening to us to write to us and tell us where you heard this and give us some feedback on the content," and gave it a postal address for people to send in a card. And we talk, you know, fast forward 101 years to today, and we're talking about social audio, and we're talking about interactivity and audio. You know, we've been doing this for a century. And so when we think about what technology enables for the next century, whether consumers want to get content on demand, whether they want to hear it live on a smart device or in a connected car or connected TV, or whether they want to flip on that broadcast dial that they're comfortable with, call into the station, text the station, hit a button in the app to chat with friends, technology is just enabling our storytellers and our content creators to do what they've always done well, but at a much more heightened and aggressive level from an audience participation standpoint. So our vision is as a multi-platform content powerhouse. Again, as you know, we are dominant in sports. We're dominant in news. We have spoken word DNA at our core, which allows us to compete from a really strong position in podcasting. And at the end of the day, you know, we view ourselves and very much want to continue to be the most creator-friendly company in audio, whether those are independent creators that work with us in the Podcorn platform, or whether that's Demi Lovato, who launched a new podcast with us yesterday, or Kevin Durant, who is a part of our network, or Boomer Esiason, who does both broadcast and digital with us. We're very focused on creators. We're very focused on the spoken word and on influencers, but doing that across all platforms, meeting the consumer where they are, and bringing the advertiser to meet them there too.
So, you know, I think we would all agree that the language may have changed, but radio was the original proactive, reactive, integrated, interactive entertainment platform. And it's interesting now that, you know, all the things you described, we'll dig into a bit more detail on those individual elements that make up this new business in just a second. But it's interesting that it's all audio, you know?
Yes.
It must have been very seductive to have thought, and I'm sure you did talk about developing video content or video platforms, because we live in a video world. So why just audio? What does that do for you?
So I'll start and then Ken can pick up. So we do have video extensions and we have other multimedia or multimodal extensions of our content. For example, we talked about sports a little bit this morning. Most of our sports stations also stream video content of their live broadcast. We have a partnership with Twitch. We do it on YouTube. We do it obviously on our own platform. A number of our podcasts, particularly, we've got a big influencer network with YouTube influencers, folks like Emma Chamberlain. Many of those podcasts are also available in video form on YouTube. But at the end of the day, it is screens when you have them, but not feeling left out when you don't. Fundamentally, we think about creating and storytelling in audio and then using screens, whether it's synced video or whether it is using GIFs and animations as part of the player experience in an app, whether it's tapping into this full screen dimension on a connected TV with lyrics and other information. We are audio at our core and then using screens to augment experiences when consumers have them. And it also gives us flexibility from an advertiser standpoint. But we do know that whether you look at the science around the chemical composition in the brain when somebody listens to audio, or whether you just look at the number of people walking around the street with headphones in and how deeply personal that experience is, that audio engages like no other media. And if you're an advertiser, particularly, that engaged impression is worth so much more than a passive impression that may be on the screen at the other side of somebody's house with the sound off. So audio at our core for our listeners and our customers, but obviously using screens and using platforms natively when our content is available on them.
And look, and just to add to that, Francis, if I could, when you think about what JD just relayed, and you think about how audio is consumed and how personal it is, right? The way that I look at it is it's a very different, very unique way for an advertiser to reach that end user. I coin it, and we talk about this in the marketplace with our advertisers, it's a consumer's personal prime time many times. It's, you know, that podcast that they may be listening to on the, you know, while they're walking the dog in the morning before they got to hop on their next Zoom. It's, you know, when you might be working out in your home gym. And if some of us are actually lucky to go to a gym, you have your earphones in and you're listening to either your favorite podcast or maybe, you know, your favorite station that's hosted by one of our unbelievable personalities. So it's that idea of engagement. And it's one of the things that we actually did a really unique study around with a research partner called Alter Agents. And JD's right. That concoction of engagement and immersion really equates to literally the most engaged impression that you can buy in media today. And we looked at that as compared to things like video, television, social. And I think what the unique component is for us is that trust, that trust metric. And that's really where that level of engagement and immersion comes from.
And I absolutely love, I've not heard that phrase before, personal prime time. That's a very neat way of describing it. So, yeah, all right, look, I understand you're going to be upbeat about radio. And we're not going to spend much time
mate,
on
I'm in, radio. I'm on.
And Lee's joining us.
Lee, it's great to have you.
He's got his coffee and he's in Starbucks. But let's just talk about radio for a minute. You know, in Australia, for example, I think any operator would say it's a 35 plus medium. You know, it may not be dead. It's not on its back with its legs in the air. But, you know, advertisers are not excited about traditional radio. You know, it's the last thing on the list. So is traditional radio dying? Are we just seeing the transference from broadcast to streaming?
Yeah, so I think with all due respect, Francis, in the US, the fundamental point of the question is flawed here, at least as the market works. And I think that we all spin each other up in knots sometimes when we talk about radio versus streaming versus podcasting. Let's take it from the consumer perspective for a minute. You know, the biggest challenge when we rebranded radio.com, the thing that pushed us over the edge wasn't jettisoning the word radio. We actually really like the word radio. Consumers really like the word radio. They really know what it is. And obviously, Apple Music has radio at its core, and our stations are available there too, right? Spotify and Pandora use the word radio. Consumers Absolutely. Love it. They know what it is. It has one of the highest NPS of all media types. The problem for us was actually .com. .com is the legacy shackle, if you will, that was around that brand, which ultimately led us to rebrand. And of course, it made sense for the company and the platform to have the same name. Media companies today are no longer houses of brands, they're branded houses, and we needed to go in that direction. But you'll see us continue to use words like radio and stations from a consumer perspective when it makes sense, because consumers know what that is. When they listen to a time-shifted podcast, which is a really rapidly growing method of consumption, they also call it radio. If you look at consumer surveys, I'm listening to my radio show. It's coming through a podcast app, Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, but it's my radio show. And sometimes podcasts can be original and can be called podcasts by the consumer. Others call them my audio show. Others call them radio. And so, you know, we try to step back and say, it's not for us to tell the consumer exactly what they should call these things. It's just for them to listen. And it's for us to meet them where they are. On the advertiser side, to your question, you know, we're not experiencing that at all. There's still demand against broadcast radio, and there's still broadcast radio audiences under 35 listening to this content. It is not an over 35 medium in the US. It is a broad medium, right? You couldn't be over 35 with a 92% reach on a monthly basis. So look, we're here to meet the consumer wherever they are and to serve he or she with whatever content they want. And they don't need to know how it was produced. They don't need to know how it got to them. They don't need to know how we're paying for it from an advertiser perspective. We just need to tell the best stories and engage the biggest audiences. And on the advertiser side, what is moving for us is being able to sell these consumers across all platforms and delivering them to the advertiser's expectations using data and attribution and all of the science that modern media necessitates, whether it's delivered linear or whether it's delivered streaming or whether it's delivered on demand. So we make it easy for the consumer and we make it easy for the advertiser. And demand is pretty difficult to satisfy these days, given those new changes in how audio is transacted.
And what a happy place that is to be. So Ken, the Edison yes. Sheravia survey came out recently. In 2014, podcasts had 2% share of ear, AM, FM radio had 51%. Fast forward 7 years, podcast share of ear has trebled. It's now 6%. I can't do the maths in my head, but AM, FM radio is down from 51 to 39% share of ear. So what JD says is right, reach is still incredibly strong. We are seeing some erosion of TSL, particularly amongst younger listeners in most markets. Spotify recorded a doubling in podcast listening hours in the last quarter of last year, which drove a 24% year-on-year increase in paying subscribers. So podcasts are the thing that are transforming the digital audio market. Now, recently you bought Cadence 19, Pineapple Street Studios.
Cadence 13, yes.
And Podcorn more recently.
Yeah.
Why are those important to the business?
Look, I mean, they serve different sides of the business, actually, which has enabled us, and I'll go into specifically what that looks like, but that has enabled us to do the things that JD just mentioned, frankly. When we go in to see an advertiser or an agency or whatever it might be, we have a really unique ability to sell a holistic audio opportunity, which is really the touchstone for what every advertiser is looking to execute in really different and unique ways. So the fact that we have the ability to go in to sell a streaming campaign side by side, a podcast campaign side by side, an over the air execution, and inject a layer of data and attribution across all of those things is just an unbelievable opportunity for us to be able to bring an advertiser. So now getting back to your question, what Cadence 13, Pineapple and Podcorn brought to the table were really unique and amazing opportunities for us as a company. With Cadence 13, you have this unbelievable, you know, premium network with partner shows as well as original productions, which are unbelievable. I mean, we've just won a number of Webby and Ambies just over the last 72 hours that have been really nice for our company to see. And then with Pineapple, we have this this unbelievable creative value that not only produce their own original content, but a ton of branded content for advertisers, some of the biggest advertisers in the world. Everybody from, you know, Hulu to SAP to Nike and Google, and the list goes on and on. And in that middle layer was maybe where we were most exposed. And I would say that sort of mid to long tail, really more mid tail. And so we went out and we you know, plugged that hole with Podcorn. And so now our ability, as I just talked about, to be able to sell across all of digital audio with an over the air layer incorporated, which by the way, studies have shown when you buy that way, your brand messaging and acquisition are so much higher than if you just look at one of those you know, legs of the stool on their own. And so that Podcorn piece really just plugged that middle layer. So it's been amazing to see how all of these things work in concert, and the marketplace reception has been absolutely fantastic.
And Francis, if I could build on the Podcorn piece, as Ken said, you know, Podcorn is a really unique asset. Obviously we already had programmatic solutions for buyers. We have everything from post-read to provided spot solutions across big shows, across our originals, as Ken said, and branded. But we wanted to attack the mid-tail in a bit of a different way. And the co-founders of Podcorn, David and Agnes, created a similar company called FameBit several years ago, which was essentially an influencer marketplace for YouTube. Google acquired it. It became YouTube Brand Connect. And when they left Google, they said, let's do that same thing, but for podcasting. Podcasting has the same problem, but it's worse, if you will, because the distribution platform isn't the same as the media. There are many distribution endpoints. And so how do we get upstream with creators, but still have it be valuable host-read creative when the brand wants it, and have it be able to run at scale across a number of creators, not just taking my radio spot and putting it across thousands of shows? There's a place and time for that, but there wasn't a solution at scale for host-read across a number of shows. And Podcorn now has nearly 50,000 creators on platform. And, you know, we think about the podcast market, Francis, it is growing hot and it's fantastic. It's the fastest growing segment of media. It's still just north of $1 billion. the influencer marketing marketplace is going to be $15 billion by the end of this year. And a lot of that is transacting in social and video. And a lot of those advertisers want to come into audio and podcasting, but they don't have a great solution to buy influencer content at scale. And so we believe Podcorn solves that. And if you size it up, if Podcorn was able to help service, let's just say 1% of the influencer marketplace coming into podcasting, we would contribute not only to gaining market share, of course, which we and our competitors are all trying to do, but really actually lifting the overall market by, you know, as much as 10%. So we think it solves a problem for advertisers. We think it's unique, and it's obviously the largest in that space. And so far, it's been a part of our family for 3 months, and the results have been outstanding.
So, you know, you've got scale, you've got cross promotional, you've got multi-platform, you know, is that what it takes to make money out of podcasts? Because for a lot of small creatives, for a lot of people operating independently, you know, what you describe is so far beyond any conversation they could even have with an advertiser. So is it becoming inevitably something of a walled garden?
I don't think it's a walled garden approach necessarily. I think the opportunity to bring an advertiser different solutions based on what their overall KPIs are is really, really important in this day and age. But make no mistake about it. I mean, our podcast business is incredibly high performing. We're making money on podcasting, and it's bringing money into the rest of the company. So I think it's what people want to talk about, and that's the executions have been absolutely fantastic for our advertisers.
And on the creator side, because you sort of mentioned that in the question as well. Look, I think we're all very sensitive to being able to have great creators be able to make money, because if there's no economic opportunity for creators, they're not going to create content, and that's bad for consumers. It's bad for the marketplace, right? And so whether you think about some of the partnerships that we do on the original side, or if you look at Podcorn's a great opportunity for creators to be able to support themselves through their work. So we spend a lot of time, and you'll continue to see us spend time and investment thinking about not just the large creators like a Demi Lovato, but also independent creators, helping them make money from their art, connecting them with advertisers, being independent in that transaction, and really just putting the creator and the consumer while serving the advertiser at the forefront. That's really important to us as Audacy.
Now, obviously, there's a limit to what you're going to be able to say, but I think the other area that has just exploded even the last few months has been social audio. You know, Clubhouse became the social media darling. I mean, if you were unkind, you could describe it as a sort of unholy collision of conference calls, chat rooms, and chaos. and it's been interesting to watch the numbers over the last few months. So, for example, downloads from the app stores have collapsed. In February, 9.6 million. March, 2.7 million. April, less than 1 million. So down 91% from a February peak. At the same time, we've seen Spotify acquire Locker Room and rebrand it to Spotify Green Room. We've got Twitter Spaces. We've got Facebook Hotline. No, how's this going to play out? Is it in your roadmap? Because it sort of fits this vision you have, but it looks pretty unstable from where I'm sitting at the moment.
I don't know that I'd call it unstable. I think, you know, I won't comment on Clubhouse's business. They have a great product. I think we come at this a little bit differently. I think, first of all, social audio is a feature. It's not a product in and of itself. And that's where you're seeing social audio be integrated into everything from Twitter to LinkedIn to Facebook, as you said, and others. And so you would imagine we're doing all kinds of things from a roadmap perspective in how to take the playback experience of our live audio content and make that more interactive, which is fundamentally what social audio is. So I think social audio is here to stay. It will exist across a lot of platforms. Some will be wide open from a social graph standpoint, like a Twitter Spaces, for example, and some will be more curated. Look, we believe in, as you've heard me say, we believe in creators. We believe in curation. And we believe a good producer, to your point about chaos earlier, a good producer can go a long way. And I think we all learned that over the past couple of quarters. A great host and a great producer can go a long way. But look, you know, again, our radio content is fundamentally social, with callers being a huge part of the characters in these shows. And we want to use technology to do that. So, yeah, of course, we're working on these kinds of things. Of course, it's important to us, but not to create a new genre for us, but really to, you know, elevate the playback experience and the interactive experience and allow other creators on platform who maybe don't have a radio show on in LA or New York or Chicago, but are good creators that work with us from a podcast standpoint, how can we bring live and interactivity to them? So it's a feature, it's here to stay, it's going to be pervasive, and there'll be a couple of different executions. And I think it's super exciting. I also think when you think about creator monetization, it's a really interesting way for us to begin to think about how to deepen the relationship with audiences and creators in a way. Obviously advertising is our core bread and butter and will always continue to be first and foremost, but there's other economic models there for creators that could open up as well. And that's exciting.
And Francis, I do think that curation piece that JD mentioned is important because, you know, look, brand safety is of high interest to advertisers, and being in the right environment, there's a happy medium between being completely raw and having a conversation that's relatively curated, which is where I think we're going to be able to kill it.
There is so much more I wanted to talk to you about, but we've got a couple of minutes left on the clock. So let me ask you just a couple of questions to finish. You know, we are in the middle of this most amazing renaissance, as you called it earlier. If you look forward, JD, you first, if you look forward 5 years, how do you see this playing out? Because clearly you've done this, you've modeled it.
It is a really broad question for 2 minutes, Francis. look, I think at the end of the day, as I've said on the call so far, putting the consumer at the center of our thought process, at least as I think about it, and obviously Ken with the advertiser, you know, those two things are our North Star. And so we just want to connect consumers at scale, wherever they are, whatever convenience they want, with great audio content. We believe in spoken word. We also believe in the power of audio to transform and transport people in ways that other media can't. And so we see continued growth in consumption. We see growth in share, obviously, in digital platforms. And that's what we're here to help deliver on behalf of Audacy. I think we see continued resilience and strong reach in broadcast in a way that is good for consumers and for advertisers. But I think we're at the precipice of the next great century of audio. We've been there for the whole last century. I think we know a thing or two about the medium, but we're also students of the medium. And I think we're excited to write what the next century looks like here, have all the assets to do it as well.
So last very quick question for JD. If you were going to pick a podcast to recommend for the people on this conference today, what would you recommend?
Oh man.
Don't steal mine, JD.
Okay. I won't steal yours. I always get in trouble with this because we have so many that we love. And it's hard to sometimes pick ones that we don't produce. So I will say one that we have that's been at the top of the charts for the last several weeks, that I think is a great show. And I'm super honored to have her as part of the team. Glennon Doyle's new podcast, We Can Do Hard Things. It meets the moment. I think she's a star as a creator. She's got great presence and great voice. And I think the show's powerful and it's obviously resonating with audiences right now. So I'll throw that one out.
Great stuff. Ken?
So one of the things that I'm addicted with right now or totally enthusiastic about is cryptocurrency and all that's going on in that space, right? I mean, it's incredible.
That's the real
we just
Wild
launched
West.
A podcast. It's that's you want to talk about Wild West. Holy cow. We just launched, and I am going to pick one of ours. We just launched a show called Exit Scam that, I still think we probably should have put fully bingeable, but we didn't. We're going week to week. So I'm giving JD stuff on that. But no, Exit Scam is something that I'm completely enthusiastic about right now. And I would highly recommend you guys check it out.
JD, Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. What a fascinating deep dive into the world of Audacy and the future of digital audio as part of RAIN's Global Audio Evolution Summit. Great stuff. Thank you.
If you'd like
to follow up with me on anything we discussed today, or indeed any other aspect of broadcast or digital audio, let me know. You can find me at francescurry.com. Now, please enjoy the rest of your day at the Global Audio Evolution Summit.